typical murderers. Some plan their crimes meticulously, while others kill on impulse.
It's Jason Voorhees.
Fred Krueger, Mother. Fred Krueger!
It is time, Michael.
When there is no more room in hell.
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
The dead.
What's your favorite scary movie?
We'll walk the earth.
An eternal child. I am the eater of...
No tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
The boogeyman is real.
Here's Johnny.
The blackest eyes.
Every year.
The devil's eyes.
Don't fall asleep.
It's got a death curse.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Death Curse Radio. I am your host, Nathan Barker, and joining me tonight is Kenton Mullins.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And Bendy Alley.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, we are back from Horror Hound Mask Fest Indianapolis this past weekend. We've had a couple days to recover, and we got a chance to talk to some of you and just kind of hang out, have some drinks, enjoy the after party, costume contests, all that good shit that we know as Mask Fest. So we are back on the grind, bringing you some new content. And before we get started with that, let's just kind of rehash. We were Saturday night, Facebook Live, Death Curse Radio Facebook Live page, and we were joined by Andrew Lady from Never Hike Alone. He was part of the group having some drinks, and Vincent DeSanti, obviously, he had stepped off. You didn't see him in the live recording episode thing there. And then, of course, Chuck Visker, the Freddy Krueger impersonator that you see at a lot of those events. He came over and hung out with us for a little bit, so we were just coming to you live, letting you know that we were there, reminding everybody we were hanging out. And just thought we'd try something a little bit different for you rather than just episodes. So thanks to those who we did get to hang out and spend some time with. Now, let's talk a little bit about that Facebook Live. Now, Kent, I'll let you tell the story, but for those that watched the live segment, the guy that's commonly known as Con Jesus, because he dresses up in a Jesus costume, Kent was on his way to join Ben and I at the table there for drinks, and he happened to see Con Jesus doing some sort of inappropriate act out on the sidewalk in front of everybody else. So, Kent, now is your chance to actually be able to tell the story. Now, let him have it.
Yeah, so I had been working all day. We had had a booth, and I was doing other things, helping with like photo ops and all that stuff. And it'd been a long day. We've been running since about 8 that morning and nonstop. I hadn't even eaten dinner yet, which actually I was coming back from eating pizza, I think, whenever I was coming to meet you guys, because I hadn't ate all day. So I figured, you know, before we meet up, I'll step outside and get a whiff of fresh air and kind of, you know, gather my thoughts. So I step out on the sidewalk and look to my right, and sure enough, there's a certain deity of Latter-day Saints. He's got his head up some chick's skirt, and he's doing his business, and she doesn't seem to mind it. And I thought, well, welcome to Horror Hound. And I nodded to the valet parkers that were standing there, mouths open, kind of watching this unfold as well. And smiled at them and walked back into the building. And then I met up with you guys.
Now, how many other people were witness to this? I'm sure a bunch of people standing outside smoking or whatever, like they always do. There had to have been a bunch of other people.
No, Jesus. There was, well, no pun intended. There was probably 40, 50 people out there.
Right in front of Jesus.
Everybody was smoking and just kind of chatting and hanging out in the middle of all this while it was going on, and nobody was acknowledging it. I thought I was fucking being punked.
Right.
But,
hey, that's Mask Fest for you. You just never know what you're going to see. That's the crazy shit. After hours, it's going down. So really, that doesn't surprise me one bit. I mean, I've seen a lot of crazy shit over the years. So yeah, Kenton didn't want to talk about that on Facebook Live, so I let him go ahead and tell the real story there as far as what happened with Con Jesus. So anyways, after we do the Facebook Live, right, we're sitting there and everybody's talking. The group got a little bit larger, And we're sitting there, and then all of a sudden, here comes the guy that is Con Jesus. And he's not in his Jesus garb, right? So he's walking up, and I'm like, hey. And then he walks over to the table, and he admits to said inappropriate sidewalk behavior, right?
Yeah. No shame in his game.
No shame. He completely was like, yep, that's exactly what I was doing, blah, blah, blah. And we're just like, I don't know, did we, maybe we high-fived him or something. I can't even remember, but
probably.
It was celebrated. Yeah, I think it was celebrated amongst us partygoers at the table.
Interesting guy. Interesting guy.
Yeah, I mean, we could have a full segment on what happened at Mask Fest, but it was a great time, as always. New venue this year, so it took a little bit of getting used to. I literally did not even see everybody that was there. Of course, I didn't show up until late Saturday. There was about an hour left for the doors opening, and I got to go. I had to run over and say hey to the Cobra Kai guys, handle some business over there. And then I made my way around a little bit. And then, of course, the after party stuff started. So definitely a bigger layout, a totally different venue than what the 9 years prior were. Parking decks across the street, different entrances and exits, really a different vibe than what everybody was used to. So it definitely took me a little bit to kind of get used to all that. Definitely a good time, though. Nothing to complain about, really, other than it was very spread out. It's kind of hard to find what was going on. But
on
the
positive end of that, the aisles aren't crowded. There's so much more space, so you're not like
as
constantly
crowded.
Bumping into people.
Yeah, not as crowded. That was definitely a plus. But over time, you get used to where things are at and kind of how to navigate around. And like I said, I was kind of in a hurry, so that didn't help either. But either way, the after party was great. And I know, Kent, that you were working and you were pretty busy most of the time, obviously judging with the costume contest and all that fun stuff. But I understand you got to spend a little bit of time with the man who portrayed Uncle Freddy. And tell us a little
bit, it was amazing.
About that.
Well, I got to spend, me and one of my buddies, you know, we got to spend about 35 minutes with Robert England in a quiet room away from everything. Just, you know, shooting the shit with him and talking with him while he was signing some merchandise from a lot of the crew of Horror Hound. So it's done separately in a private room, and they're not like bringing it up to him. It's all gathered beforehand, and then he just signs it all at once. And so me and Kevin got to go in there with Robert while he did that and help him, you know, move things along, and just got to shoot the shit with him, man, and just hang out with him for about 35 minutes. And, you know, he told us about living with Mark Hamill in the 70s and traveling Europe and all this stuff. It was amazing. It was, you know, one of the highlights of my time in this hobby. And then we got to do the very exact same thing with Kiefer Sutherland about 2 hours after that. We only got to spend about 15 to 20 minutes with Kiefer because he was getting ready to head out on a plane. But it was cool getting to know him on more than, you know, a walking up to the table and having to wait in line level and getting to actually conversate with him and talk to him. And man, Robert England is amazing, and anything good you've heard about him is absolutely true and what I experienced. But Kiefer Sutherland, that is like one of the coolest dudes in the world. He is the most interesting man in the world from the commercials in reality. He walked in there like fucking Rico Suave. And everything he said was cool, and he sounds cool. He's like a white Morgan Freeman with his voice, and it was an amazing experience, man. And it was, those two experiences were the highlight of you know, the years that I've been in this hobby. So yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Absolutely, two legends right there. I mean, what better of a time could you have when you're at Horror Round? I mean, Christ, two of the main draws there. So. Yep, I know you had a busy weekend, more on the leisure side for old Benny and I. And anybody that's listening, if you were at the costume contest or you participated in the costume contest, Kent was one of the judges that was kind of off to the back table there. So, yeah, you might have seen him and didn't even know it. So, but yeah, walking around with Ben too. Ben got noticed a couple times from his Friday the 13th network, which all I got to say about that is awesome. So if anybody likes to watch Ben's videos. They know exactly what that is. So yeah, we had a fun time with some of the guys and yelling out awesome across the room and stuff. So yeah, anything you want to throw in there about your time there, Ben, before we get the show started tonight?
Just an absolutely amazing experience for me personally. I got to meet my favorite director, of course, Adam Marcus from Jason Goes to Hell. I've been waiting forever to do that. And he was super cool. I mean, we talked for almost 20 minutes. I left there, I think, with 21 autographs. So yeah, I went hard, weekend passes, and I was there from open to close all 3 days. I got to hang out with you guys, meet, you know, like you said, some of our listeners and viewers on my YouTube channel. And I also got to do a little filming for the upcoming Jason Goes to Hell documentary, The Dark Heart of Jason Voorhees. So that was just, you know, a whole nother experience right there. Whorehound always puts on a great convention. I think the lineup this year was just absolutely amazing. But, you know, a new venue, it was hard to, you know, kind of find your way around when you get used to the other place. But, I mean, I look forward definitely to the future conventions by Whorehound there, because this one was just top notch, top of the line.
Yeah, speaking of the Jason Goes to Hell documentary, if anybody happens to check that out in the near future when we finally get it, if you see some of the fan interviews, now granted not all of them because some will be done at a later time, I'm sure, but some of those was actually shot by our very own Benjamin here, so be on the lookout for that. But yeah, it was just a good fun weekend as always, as most conventions are. And the lineup was great. I wasn't really after a bunch of autographs myself. I just got a couple of them, and most of the others were people that you see on a regular basis. So either way, it was definitely a good hangout as usual. And like I said, next year will be obviously different because people will be more used to kind of the layout and navigating around. So if anything, like I said, it's just a lack of experience there. But obviously when you spend 9 years at one venue, you're going to get used to it pretty quick. But the one thing that I did like better about that one was everybody was kind of tighter knit. I mean, if you walked out into the parking lot hangout area, you knew that's where everybody was going to be, where this was kind of more spread out. So you kind of had to do a lot more walking than the old place, I thought. So all right, now that we've hashed out Mask Fest and all that good shit, and thanks to those that we did get to hang out and talk to, and hopefully we'll get to meet some more of you in the near future at another show. Some of us will be at Days of the Dead coming up, so if we might run into some of you there, we'll just have to see. So moving forward for tonight's episode, we have decided to do a special segment called We Love the 80s. Now, this was actually Ben's idea, so props to Ben for the idea on this one. Now, what this will entail will be us going basically year by year throughout the 1980s. Each year, we'll have its own episode where we basically discuss our personal favorites or highlights of films that were released each respective year. Now, we won't be releasing these special segments all in a row. We will have a regular episode or two in between each year just to help with variety. So for tonight's episode, We Love the 80s, Volume 1, 1980. Now, for me personally, I am a huge Friday the 13th fan. Obviously, having the other podcast, Return to Camp Blood, all Friday the 13th, and obviously highlighting some of the anniversaries on here and some of the other stuff on here highlighting Friday the 13th. I mean, yeah, we love Jason Voorhees here. So it's a no-brainer that for me personally, now there's a lot of good films in 1980, and tonight we're not going to go in any particular order as far as what we're going to discuss, but for me, I'm just going to say that 1980 is all about Friday the 13th, all about Camp Crystal Lake, and the first Friday the 13th film that started the Jason Voorhees craze that developed into the biggest horror icon of all time and currently 12 installments later. So kind of a big deal. I mean, the first one's always going to be classic. So Friday the 13th is an absolute highlight of 1980, hands down. And talking before the show, I think we were pretty much all into agreement that Friday, in no particular order, but Friday is 1980. Right, Kemp?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's one of the standouts. Friday the 13th is always going to be important to me and special to me. It's, you know, whenever I first started out as an artist making masks, it's what I focused on because it was so important to me. And no one can argue that it's not one of the most iconic horror franchises that has ever existed and that will ever exist. So yeah, 1980 definitely has a hockey mask stamped on it. Well, technically, I guess it doesn't. Not the 1980 version, but it's got Voorhees stamped on it regardless.
Right, absolutely. Now, Friday the 13th, the first installment, is just another example of what low-budget filmmaking can do, just like Halloween a couple years prior. You don't have to have a lot of money to make an absolutely iconic film. And it's just classic Friday stuff that started it all off. I mean, obviously with Friday in its later years, we kind of got away from the roots of Friday with the traditional campground and all the slashing at the campground and stuff. But this one just kind of set the tone and just showed you that you don't have to have a huge budget to make a classic movie. And I just really like the feel of it. And of course, Mrs. Voorhees, I mean, it's just, the film is just so iconic, and some of the things that we see in there aren't perfect, obviously, with female hands with hair on them and all that, the people say, which, hey, you know, you got to work with what you have to work with. So there's some things that you just kind of have to overlook and just let it ride. And they just proved, just like John Carpenter did, Sean Cunningham proved that I can make a badass movie with not a lot of money. And of course, both franchises went on to be iconic. Michael Myers is obviously right up there in one of the top three slashers. Jason, Michael Myers and Freddy Krueger, of course, top three. So it set the tone for all the awesome shit that we had no idea was going to develop later on. Now, Ben, you got the Friday the 13th Network. You're obviously a big Friday fan, and you agreed too. Yeah, Friday was right up there for me for obvious reasons.
Oh, yeah, of course. Friday 13th is the champion of 1980. It just got it right. If you look at the other films that were released in 1980, kind of holiday films, you had like New Year's Evil, Christmas Evil, It's All a Good Night. They were all, I think, trying, you know, to get that holiday thing going. Kind of, you know, following Halloween's footsteps, but Friday just got it right. Friday is the one that, you know, spawned the franchise. Makeup effects by Tom Savini, just everything was perfect with Friday. I won't say perfect, but that's what makes it perfect. Maybe the little flaws and all that. It's just classic horror. Yeah, I totally agree with you guys on that.
Yeah, it's obviously, it is perfect, but it's not perfect. But like I said, what I had just mentioned about some of the FX, and of course, not having a female's hands where you obviously, when you see the swinging of the machete and it's not, I mean, yeah, those are the things that you just kind of overlook. It's whatever, but it's the vibe of the movie and the way that it was filmed. And I really don't know other than to just say that the vibe is there, and that's what makes it so great. All these innocent young actors, obviously Kevin Bacon started his career basically Friday the 13th, and most of them Tom did not Savini. Go on. Yeah, I mean, Tom Savini, but not as an actor. I'm just on the actor slash actress side of it. Outside of Kevin Bacon, the rest of them didn't really have, well, they didn't have Kevin Bacon careers. We'll just say it that way. Not that none of them didn't go on to do other stuff, because they certainly did, just not near as notable as that. So, yeah, I think it's the vibe, and it just sets the tone. And of course, the spawn of the sequels, it was continuous throughout the 80s. So obviously, yeah, I'm going to say that Friday the 13th for me is king of 1980. I know we said we weren't going to do any particular order, but for me personally, Friday the 13th is king of 1980. So yeah, we were in agreement on basically everything we were going to discuss tonight. We just said not in any particular order, because obviously there's people that would want to lynch us for saying that it is king of 1980, but that's the beauty of it. We're all entitled to our own opinions. Not that other films aren't great, or maybe even shot better, or just whatever, for whatever reason you think that they are better. So moving on forward from that, we were all in agreement that The Shining, I mean, come on. The Shining, for some people, it is one of their top favorite films of all time. Not just in horror movies, but all time. And for rightful reasons, it's just like, wow. I mean, like I said, I know it's crazy to say, well, Friday the 13th is better than The Shining, but it's just a matter of how important is a franchise to you. Like, Friday the 13th is a big part of my life. So I'm going to say, yeah, it's king. I'm not saying it's a better film than The Shining, but for me, it's definitely the king. So now, Ken, you mentioned earlier that I think you said that The Shining is one of your all-time favorite films, not just horror films, but in all time, right?
Absolutely. It is. And The Shining is my king of 1980. I think that it's as close as a movie can get to being a perfect film. I love 99.99% about this movie, and I've read the book, and I personally think the book is, or the movie is better than the book. I'm also a huge Kubrick fan. I'm a huge Jack Nicholson fan. I'm a sucker for ghost stories, you know, and there's a lot of ghost story tied into this. I like, if a movie is done well, I like vague, you know, I like having to come up with my own meanings if it's done well. A lot of times I don't like that, but I think this is a good example of that being done well. This movie, whenever they bury me in a casket, I hope they have a Blu-ray of this and they're with me, because it's one of the most important movies to me, especially as a horror fan. And, you know, another movie on our list that we'll talk about here in a minute is the one that turned me into a horror fan at a very young age. But The Shining was the kicker to that just kind of really intensified that. And I love everything about this movie, and I've owned it on every medium that it's been available on. And I've probably seen it, I'm not even shitting you, I've probably seen it 75 times. There for a while I was in college, I was watching it every other day, or it would be on while I was sleeping. I think it's an amazing movie. I think it's almost a perfect movie.
Well, and you just said two things, and which would be my response also in talking about this film, because it's an amazing movie. If Friday the 13th wasn't as near and dear to me, and I'm like Ben would probably say the same thing, that The Shining would be the king of 1980, hands down. I mean, it's that whole Friday vibe, and when you're involved with so much Friday stuff, it's like Friday is always going to be my king of that year. But The Shining would, I think most people would agree, overall, if you're just talking just production value movies in general, how classic just a single film would be, then yeah, The Shining is going to be at the top of your list, and for rightful reasons. So, like I said, Ben, I mean, Friday is important to us for the reasons that it is, but you had mentioned too that if we were to do a tops list, that The Shining would be on that list for you as well, right?
Yeah, I actually believe, I could be wrong, but I believe The Shining was number one until Friday the 13th came out. Friday the 13th kind of dethroned it. So yeah, totally. The Shining was just a beautiful film, as all Stanley Kubrick's films are. I mean, he's a great storyteller, you know, just great visuals, I think, like, you know, the long shots of the hotel, and you really get a sense that you're isolated, you know, the snowstorm and everything. It was, you know, that right there is just kind of eerie. Then throw in some ghosts, you know, and then throw in your father, you know, Jack Nicholson coming after you with an axe. And yeah, The Shining scared the hell out of me for a long time when I was younger. I remember watching it and it scared the shit out of me. That was the movie that scared me. And now as I'm older, you know, to go back, I appreciate it a lot more. And I also think it's really interesting. Kent, I'm sure you know all about this, being such a big fan, but all the different theories out there, the whole,
there's a million of them. There's a documentary about it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's just, I don't know, you know, it take away from it, you know, what you want. Is it true? You know, is there really A's and 11s and all this stuff in there? I don't know, but it's definitely very interesting. It's just an amazing film. I think there's so much there. You can watch it, you know, for the 20th time and find something that you didn't see, you know, the 18th or 19th time. And you're like, oh shit, what a surprise. So definitely love The Shining. And it would be number one, you know, if it wasn't for Friday. But yeah, guys, great film.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be. If not for Friday, that would be the king of 1980 for me, hands down. Like I said, I know we weren't really going to put them in order, but sometimes things are near and dear to you for whatever reason, and it will dethrone another one that might actually be a better movie. Kind of like when we were talking about the Jason Goes to Hell thing on that episode, for nostalgic reasons, you might like it better, even though it's not necessarily a better film. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is as far as that goes. But the two ingredients to that with Jack Nicholson and Kubrick right there, you know you're going to have a great film. There is absolutely no doubt if you put those two together, you will have a great film. It could be about underwater basket weaving, and it's going to be a great film. You know what I mean? It does not matter what the topic is or the plot or whatever. Those guys are masters at their craft, and I love Kubrick stuff too. So yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense. So moving on now, like I said already, the year has a lot of good shit in it, but we would be here all night highlighting that. So just to keep it on the level, we're just going to discuss a few here. So 1980, if you think back also, the other highlight for me, I guess if we're just going to essentially kind of call a top three list here just for time's sake, and I'm just going to say because of Janet Leigh and Jamie Leigh, I'm just going to throw out there Prom Night and The Fog and just kind of put them right there together as the other kind of main highlights. Not that other films aren't better, like I said, I mean, but considering the circumstances with that, and I think, I don't remember, maybe it was you, Kent, I'll let you hit on that one, but I think, or maybe it might've been Ben, I don't know, whichever one of you just chime in. One of you kind of said that it was the year of the Lees.
Yeah. Yeah. The 1980 was definitely Jamie Lee Curtis's year, three films, Prom Night, The Fog, and Terror Train. I think Terror Train's a little overlooked and underrated, but I agree totally. The Fog, I mean, John Carpenter, you can't get better than that. His follow-up to Halloween, I think that was great. Definitely. I mean, John Carpenter has hit on like every genre. I mean, he's done slasher. This is his Ghost, you know, aliens and vampires and everything else. So definitely really good stuff here. The Fog, you know, John Carpenter, great filmmaker. Definitely showed us that he wasn't, you know, he didn't go and do Halloween 2 or another slasher or something like that. He definitely widened his, you know, area a little bit there. And Prom Night with Jamie Lee Curtis again. This time she's not, you know, the quiet, shy girl that we knew in Halloween. She's, you know, she's the prom queen. She's popular, you know, she's wearing makeup and everything. And I loved Prom Night. I think the it's really simple, but I think that I like the killer. I think it was just like a ski mask or something, you know, and he's got the axe and everything. I mean, that was creepy. Some great death in Prom Night. The van scene, you know, the back doors open and the head comes. And then, of course, there's the head rolling around on the dance floor at the end. And I love the Prom Night song, actually, the theme song. So, yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis absolutely knocked it out. If Friday the 13th or The Shining were kings of 1980, Jamie Lee Curtis would definitely be the queen of 1980.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. After Halloween, she just boom, boom, boom. She went right the fuck to work. So definitely cannot take that away from her by any means. And then, of course, obviously with the second Halloween, so she didn't have any downtime.
I never got to see The Fog or Prom Night. Well, let me take that back. I've seen both of them, but it's honestly, it's been so long since I've seen them that I couldn't really take part in in-depth conversation about them. I probably haven't seen either one of those in, it's probably been over 15 years. So that's all you guys.
All right. Well, I guess that's us then. I was thinking that you were kind of right on board that if we were just going to kind of keep it in general without dragging on, that those would kind of be the other main highlights. Like I said, not that there's not other great movies. So one thing that I did want to just throw out there before we do kind of wrap things up here, and that's just a couple, I don't know if you want to call it honorable mention or just whatever, but I think that something that needs to be discussed for 1980, and that is Cannibal Holocaust. Now, that movie wasn't exactly the best movie by any means, but at that time it was super, super controversial movie, and not so much now, but back then with people thinking that it's real and it's banned and all this other bullshit, it was a big deal. Like I said, not necessarily for the quality, but just for all the controversy that came around that. And I know you wanted to mention a little bit, a few things about that, Kent.
Yeah. Have you ever seen it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I watched it for the first time a few years ago, and I've maybe seen it, I don't know, two or three times since then. And I don't think it's a good movie by any stretch of the imagination, and it certainly made a dent in society whenever it came out, but more for the stir that it caused. A lot of people thought that it was real, and looking at it now, even now, the special effects hold up really well, but it's watchable even today. It's just not that great, but I think it's important for its, you know, what it did society wise more than it is anything.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't a great film by any means, and if it didn't get the controversy and all the talk that came along with that, then it wouldn't really be on anyone's radar, I don't think. Yeah, the FX does still hold up for its time, but I mean, if you think about it objectively, I don't really think it would have gotten much, I don't know, it wouldn't have got much exposure outside of the controversy stuff. I don't know what you guys think on that. I think, Ben, you were kind of in agreement too, that it was more of a controversy thing than anything, but definitely something noteworthy because of how big of a deal it was at the time.
Yeah, I've only seen it one time, and it was just because of everybody, you know, freaking out of it, exactly, the controversy, and it was like, oh, I got to check this out. So, seen it, I know of it, not really a fan of it, not my type of film, but I respect it for what it is, and definitely the impact, you know, the controversy, all that, you know, of course, you know, that's what sells, that's what drew me in, but probably the influence that it's left, I know, on a lot of people. I know Eli Roth, you can tell in his films, you know, Cabin Fever, Hostel, he's a huge fan of the film, so I respect it for that.
And Green Inferno.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, I mean, you know, it has influenced a whole nother, you know, generation of filmmakers. But me, myself, I checked it out because everybody was, you know, you got to see this movie. But, you know, I'll stick to Friday the 13th.
It was the OG gore porn.
Pretty much. And I remember watching it many years ago, probably like in the mid-90s or something, and not really just being like, what the fuck is this bullshit? And not really paying a whole lot of attention, probably just sitting around with friends in somebody's parents' basement or something, you know, or whatever back then, you know, just hanging out as teenagers would do. And for whatever reason, it got watched, or parts of it got watched or whatever. And then when Green Inferno was coming out a few years back, actually almost like to the year, I think that was like August. I don't remember. It was the summer of 2015. I don't remember when Green Inferno came out exactly, but whatever. That's not the point. So a few years ago, then we get that, and there's all the hype over that film and stuff. And I went and seen it in the theater, of course, but I revisited the film prior to seeing Green Inferno, and it was kind of the same thing. You're just kind of like, it's watchable, but the only thing that gets it watches for the most part is because people want to see what the controversy is about, and then they watch it, and it's like, oh, whatever. So I don't know. That's just
the Green Inferno was pretty tame even compared to some movies that come out without that notoriety.
Yeah, I thought so too. I walked out of the theater like, yeah, that wasn't shit, nothing like I expected. So, but yeah, that caused me to rewatch it just because of that same kind of controversy at the time. So yeah, it is what it is. If you haven't seen it, give it a watch, but just know that it was basically the controversy probably led most people to watch it. Other than that, I don't think you really would have thought much of it. So anyways, those are just some of the highlights for 1980 for us.
Well, I got like one more.
No, we're not done yet though.
Oh, okay.
All right. So those are basically just some quick highlights for us. Like I said, we could be here all night talking about all the great films from 1980, because there certainly were more of them. Those are just kind of the ones we decided to go with for volume one for 1980 to kick off the We Love the 80s segment. So with Cannibal Holocaust getting kind of what you'd call an honorable mention in there, Kent and Ben, I'll let you guys each plug one in there too if you want, and then we will wrap this up. So Kent, did you have one that you want to discuss real quick as a so-called honorable mention?
Well, the movie that got me into horror came out in 1980. And it's not one that I think a lot of people have seen, but it's called The Changeling with George Scott. And like I said, it might have been the one that imprinted on me my love for ghost films. But it's a ghost story, and I rewatched it a few years back, and it's one of those things where I wish I hadn't revisited it and just remembered it the way it was in my head. But I remember watching it from the top steps while my mom thought I was in bed. I was real little, and it scared the shit out of me. And I had nightmares for months. It scarred me for a while, and it, you know, implanted that love for this stuff. And it's the one that started it all for me, was the Changeling. So it's extremely important to me. And when you factor in the Changeling with The Shining and then Friday the 13th as, you know, kickers, 1980 might be the most important year in horror films for me as a horror fan.
Well, yeah. And I mean, for that reason that you just said, of you remember staying at the top of the stairs and all that, and that's why movies are important to people. It might not necessarily be because they're a great film. It's just they're impactful for whatever reason. So no, I definitely get that. And Benny, do you have anything you want to throw in there right before we wrap it up?
Yeah, a little honorable mention. I'd like to throw out Maniac. It's not a great film really by any means, but I think the effects by Tom Savini are at least notable. Maybe not his best work, but definitely his more gruesome work. You know, shotgun to somebody's head. There's the great scalping scene in there, and I love the musical score, or maybe the sound effects, I should say. A lot of the screeching and all that during the kills. So Maniac, you know, good film. Fun to throw in every now and then, you know, if you want a good gore bath. If anybody hasn't seen Maniac, I would say definitely just go check out the trailer, because the trailer for it literally just shows you all the kills in the movie. So definitely Maniac, yep. 1980.
Yeah, that's another one that's definitely watchable. I mean, not great by any means, but most of the movies, other than a small handful in 1980, just because of FX and technology at the time, were not like great films, or, you know, super good films, or whatever you want to describe them as. Obviously, there's a few of them, and The Shining is its own beast as far as that goes. But if you just think about the big picture, a lot of the films that we could sit here and talk about all night, we're not necessarily going to say they're great films, but they're definitely watchable. And it was a good year for, like I said, that boomed sequels, or maybe got careers jump started and all that good shit, especially, like I said, Friday the 13th, look what happened after that. So, of course, for Jamie Lee, I mean, there was a lot going on for some of these people. So, yeah, absolutely. But like I said, opinions, they are what they are. I mean, that's just what's notable for us as far as this special segment that we decided to do year by year. So, like I said, we'll have another regular episode or two, and then we'll be back with volume 2 for 1981 and highlight some more films for that year. So that wraps up another episode of Death Curse Radio. So please rate and review wherever the hell you listen to the show at, and check us out on Facebook at Death Curse Radio, or our website, deathcurseradio.com. Until next time.
Evil lurks in the mind of a bad man.
This is the end, friend.
And your suffering will be legendary, even in hell. From the prime time, bitch.
I am the devil, and I am here to do the devil's work.
Candyman.
Eternal.
Because I've seen enough horror movies to know any weirdo wearing a mask is never friendly.
That is better.
I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare, huh?
Some things have a strange idea entertained.